The Kumaras have described the process of removing misery, which is very basically developing one's attachment to Krishna and developing or becoming detached or developing knowledge of detachment from the bodily concept of life. And the process he described was to become absorbed in the hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. Then, after describing that process of simultaneously becoming detached from matter and attaching oneself to Krishna, he began to speak of the results of that, specifically in terms of the detachment from matter and the knowledge one achieves. Through this knowledge, one is freed from the bodily concept of life. Just imagine, practically we can't imagine, but just imagine how much our view of reality would shift if we did not see in the bodily concept of life. When we look around the room, we wouldn't see bodies. We would see souls who, in the sense of being of the same energy as we ourselves, that same conscious energy, vibhinamsa, energy of Krishna, there is such a oneness amongst all souls in that way. And that knowledge of the oneness of everything, and this is the real oneness, who did you bring? Is he going to come here? Am I going to have the fortune? That knowledge, that vision allows one to see everything in relationship to Krishna. And that is the natural consciousness of every living entity. And we ourselves, in our conditioned consciousness at this point, it is inconceivable practically that this is our natural consciousness. We see our own consciousness. We see the consciousness of a dog or a cow or a monkey or a fly or a mouse. And to understand that they actually are all souls, all these living entities, they have life. The symptom of life is consciousness. They are all conscious. Even the tree is conscious. Even the blade of grass is conscious. And naturally, they possess very, very, very deep and broad consciousness. But now their consciousness is restricted and ours is restricted. Jai Jagannath. By being in the material world. And what causes that? What causes the restriction? The losing of this very universal consciousness where everything is seen, even living entities are seen in relationship with Krishna. What causes that diminishing of consciousness, that restriction of consciousness? False ego. But what does the Bhagavatam say here? Yes, but what causes the bodily concept of life? Yes. Desiring to enjoy the material world. This restricts the consciousness. And this is quite amazing if one considers that the entire material world is basing itself on increasing their desires for material enjoyment. So what the central focus of contemporary so-called civilization is, how to restrict my consciousness, how to make it smaller and smaller and smaller, like that of a tree, by becoming enwrapped in unlimited desires for sense pleasures. So rather than, and the result of this is horrible. Horrible. And it's not that contemporary societies have become happy, either happy or peaceful, or secure by living in this way. No, rather, they're quite hellish. So the conclusion of the section that we were reading yesterday is that one shouldn't see anything more pleasing than the desire and the attempt to free one's consciousness, which is called self-realization, and that's described in text 32. And on the other hand, thinking that just simply sense enjoyment and making money are the purpose of life, this brings destruction of one's own self-interest. That's 33. So those who wish to make use of their life should at least restrict their endeavors for sense enjoyment in such a way that they are scripturally oriented and regulated by the scriptures. And in that way, gradually detachment will come rather than a deepening of ignorance. But yet, although religion can be followed, religiosity, dharma, can be followed for artha and kama, material gain and ultimately sense enjoyment, the real purpose of following Shastra is liberation, and the topmost liberation is what? I couldn't hear one answer. Yes. Yes, an eternal servant of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. This is the highest form of liberation. This is beyond liberation, actually. It makes liberation, as Bilamangala Thakur says, the Mukti lady is standing with folded arms at the door saying, "What can I do for you? What need is there of Mukti? What can you offer me?" When every day, Bilamangala Thakur says, Krishna himself is coming to bring me milk. So, moksha lagudakrit is one of the characteristics of prema bhakti. It makes liberation or the pleasure of liberation seem pale, shadow-like, insignificant. But that is, of course, the most exalted consciousness. So, 35, text 35 of the verses of the Kumaras asks us to consider that everything of the material world, even if it is acquired religiously and not hedonistically, all the religious activities, all that piety, all the economic development, all the sense gratification, these are all stolen away by death, which is unavoidable in this world, and therefore it represents Krishna. Savaharas chaham, Krishna says. Mrityu savaharas chaham. So therefore in text 36, the same concept is continued but concluded, and then the summary shall begin. Or perhaps, let's see, is it 36 and 37 or just 36? Yes. This is the final, the summary of more or less this talking about what is truly valuable and what is not valuable. We accept as blessings different states of higher life, distinguishing them from lower states of life. We see a person who is beautiful or wealthy or a genius or very, very strong, or even very detached or famous, as being blessed. and we tend to long similar blessings. But we should know that such distinctions exist only in relation to the interchange of the modes of material nature. This is just the play of goodness, passion, ignorance, covering, different coverings over the actual blissful consciousness of the soul. And therefore, actually these states of life have no permanent existence, for all of them will be destroyed by the Supreme Controller. And that which one should long for, long to gain, that is eternal. All good, all bad karma is temporary. Therefore, an intelligent person, he accepts his karma, knowing that it's temporary, and as best he is able, he uses whoever he is, whatever he is in the service of Krishna, and he does not long to change his karma. This tendency is strong. We want to be something other than what we are. That's actually good in one sense, but it's terrible in another sense. If we think, I'm my body and I want to be something other than that, I want to be an eternal servant of Krishna, that's very good. But on the other hand, if we think I'm Krishna's servant, I wish I had this, I had wish I had that, I had wish I had that, that is not good. We should seek the jewels that come only from depth in Krishna consciousness. And not be trapped by materialism. Why? Or higher species, or lower species, or exactly parallel species. All of it is temporary and miserable. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam.
That's also inviting karma.
Yeah.
He doesn't want that, but that's what will happen.
That's what will happen. And that's why it takes time. Unless one is very, very serious and very intelligent. Intelligent in the sense that a person who is very intelligent will hear, consider, reach his conclusion, and then act appropriately. Not, yeah, but. I know it's true, but. We shouldn't be yeah buts. But it's hard not to be due to our material conditioning. But Sanat Kumar is going to give the conclusion of what one should do. And we brought this up yesterday even. What should one do if one wants to be a devotee and is trying, but is even sees that he has the anchors of material enjoyment and pleasures and desires pulling him back? What should one do? The ultimate conclusion Sanat Kumar is going to say, and he's going to summarize everything in the last two verses of his instructions. But here we'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. In my book, it's on page 195, just about a little more than a third of the way down. We should therefore know that our material activities are just like childish play. Children may play on the beach. Raise your hand if you've played on the beach. Yes. Do they have good beaches in the south? Huh? Children may play on the beach, and the father will sit and watch this childish play. The construction of buildings with sand, the construction of walls and so many things. But finally, the father will ask the children to come home. Then everything is destroyed. Or sometimes the water of the ocean comes. The tide rises and destroys all the wonderful constructions, the sandcastles. Then everything is destroyed, and persons who are too much addicted to the childish activities of economic development and sense gratification are sometimes especially favored by the Lord. when he destroys their construction of these things. It is said by the Lord, Yasyaham Anugrahami Risha Tadaram Shanai. The Lord told Yudhisthira Maharaj that his special favor is shown to his devotee when he takes away all the devotee's material opulences. Generally, therefore, it is experienced that Vaishnavas are not very opulent in the material sense. When a Vaishnava, pure devotee, tries to be materially opulent and at the same time desires to serve the Supreme Lord, his devotional service is checked. The Lord, in order to show him a special favor, destroys his so-called economic development and material opulences. Now, how does the person who's had his material opulences destroyed, how does he feel? Does he think, oh, Jai, how wonderful, Krishna has taken everything from me. It's so nice. He may feel like that, but he will have to go through some changes of consciousness before he actually will feel like that. Pingala, it happened to some degree to Pingala, and Aila, the Aila Gita describes, and the Avanti Brahmana. But great disappointment causes a pain in the heart, deep, deep pain. And that deep, deep pain, if one is a pure devotee, it can be transformed into a surrender, a detachment, a surrender, and a taking shelter of Krishna. Thus the devotee, being frustrated in his repeated attempts at economic development, ultimately takes solid shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord. This kind of action may also be accepted as Isha Vidam Sita Shisham, which is one of the last line of the verse. Isha Vidvam Sita Shisham. Destroyed, things are destroyed by the blessings of the Supreme Lord. And ultimately, everyone in this world is going to be blessed, for the thing that they are most attached to is going to be destroyed, and that, of course, is the material body. But most individuals do not look forward, certainly, to such blessings. And when they come, they'll do everything to avoid them. And then when they can't avoid them, terror enters most persons' heart. But very staunch devotees, they can actually transcend that. We saw that even with our Sridhar Maharaj. Quite incredible how jolly he remained practically right to the end. Never showed any fear. You know, he wanted to live. And he tried his best to cure it, but whatever Krishna wants. I telephoned him a few days before he left. He said, "You should come and see Tamal Krishna Maharaj's samadhi. And by the time you get here, I may be his next door neighbor." Huh? Yes. So now I will go. Huh? Yeah. So fearless. It was quite incredible. Quite incredible. Astounding.
And when he was leaving Panchanatra also?
Yes.
He
looked terrible by the videos that I saw. He shouldn't have been smiling by material calculation. And when I spoke to him, he said, "There's so much service to do. I want to stay." Just a few days before he left. But he was thinking, it was so much service to do as opposed to, "Oh, I have so many plans for my enjoyment." I mean, no one will say it in such a gross way, but centered around me. No. In the course of our preaching work, Prabhupada continues, we sometimes see that materialistic persons come to us and offer their obeisances to take blessings, which means they want more and more material opulences. If such material opulences are checked, such persons are no longer interested in offering obeisances to the devotees. Such materialistic persons are always concerned about their economic development. They offer obeisances to saintly persons or the Supreme Lord and give something in charity for preaching work with a view that they will be rewarded with further economic development. However, when one is sincere in his devotional service, the Lord obliges the devotee to give up his material development and completely surrender unto him. Because the Lord does not give blessings of material opulence to his devotee. Because he doesn't, people are afraid of worshipping Lord Vishnu, because they see that the Vaishnavas, who are worshippers of Lord Vishnu, are poor in superficial material opulence. And then, right at the end, the Lord does not bestow material blessings upon the devotees, for they may be entrapped again in the material world by continuous birth, death, old age, and disease. Krishna's vision of what is good for us is very different than our vision, what is good for us. We think in terms of 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, maybe 30, 40, at most 50 years. But Krishna is saying what is good for us in terms of what is eternally good for us. And that is, by definition, best for us. Like a father, sometimes we'll have to slap the child. And the child may be thinking, oh, he's done something that's caused me pain. But it is really for the benefit of the child, because the father, when he acts, by definition, he's acting in a loving way. He wants the child to give up some behavior and accept another behavior. And sometimes it's forcibly done, by Krishna especially, forcibly. He forces one to surrender. Does anyone wish to be forced to surrender? Okay. A brave soul. Serious and brave. Confirmed by the chairs screeching. Due to materialistic opulence, persons like Ravana become puffed up for sense gratification. Indeed, I don't think we read it in this class, but possibly, or in the last classes I were given, it says that nothing makes one as proud and fills one with as much illusion as material wealth. Did we read that in this class? Or then it must have been in the 10th canto, in the early chapters of the 10th canto. Nothing makes one as proud as one's material wealth. Nothing. So therefore, Krishna may tend to keep the devotees somewhat free from material wealth for the purpose of removing their pride or keeping them humble. Like Ravana is the example of someone who became so arrogant due to his wealth. He became puffed up for sense gratification, and Ravana even dared kidnap Sita, who was both the wife of Lord Ramachandra and the goddess of fortune, thinking that he would be able to enjoy the pleasure potency of the Lord. But actually, by such action, Ravana became vidvamsita, or ruined. At the present moment, human civilization is too much attached to economic developments and sense gratification, and is therefore nearing the path of ruination. Sanat Kumar advised the king, therefore, my dear king, King Prithu, try to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is living within everyone's heart along with the individual soul, in each and every body, either moving or non-moving. The individual souls are fully covered by the gross material body and subtle body made of the life, air, and intelligence. So to understand the Supersoul, understand the Lord, is what Sanat Kumar is advising. And that can be done in a mechanical way through Ashtanga Yoga. But however one does it, or the way that, of course, he has recommended, is Bhakti Yoga. How do we know he recommends Bhakti Yoga? Because he's recommended the hearing about Krishna continuously. And filling, and that is even the process of detachment. So he's recommending bhakti and not recommending using our human life to increase our material desires. So therefore, close to the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, in conclusion, one should not waste his time by so-called economic development and sense gratification. It is a waste of time. But who is so strong and so fixed to think like that? Whoever is like that, so strong, he will make rapid advancement. But he should cultivate spiritual knowledge to understand the Supersoul and the individual soul and their relationship. And if one has desires and one can't proceed fully 100% straight like that, then one should, under guidance of one's spiritual master and the Vaishnavas, he should, and the Shastra, he should learn how to use his material desires in such a way that they will not take him in the opposite direction from spiritual advancement. They may take him a little bit this way, but he'll get there. This requires guidance. And the guidance is from Shastra and the persons who have assimilated the Shastra, the spiritual master. So one should cultivate spiritual knowledge to understand the Supersoul and the individual soul and their relationship. Why? This is the natural consciousness of the living entity. It will not be taken away. In this way, by advancement of knowledge, one can achieve liberation and the ultimate goal of life. It is said that if one takes to the path of liberation, even rejecting his so-called duties in the material world, he is not a loser at all. But a person who does not take to the path of liberation, yet carefully executes economic development and sense gratification, loses everything. It is guaranteed he will leave everything behind. And this is going to be made so graphically clear in the story of Paranjana. Whatever one depends on in the material world, whatever one is attached to in the material world, he will lose it. And therefore, that attachment will cause him so much pain. So much pain. Because to lose something one is attached to is painful. And again, the thing that we are most attached to is our bodies. And everything, our extended bodies, the family, so attached. So the trick is to build up one's attachment to Krishna. And at the same time, try our best to be detached. But without building up attachment to Krishna, detachment is actually not possible. Not possible. And Prabhupada is going to state this in a wonderful way, in a purport that, Krishna willing, we shall read later. And then Prabhupada explains right in the end, if a person, out of sentiment or for some other reason, because we can become very enthusiastic and inspired, yes, I'm going to be a devotee, I give everything. And then, later on, we see that we haven't achieved what we had hoped to achieve in the time that we wished to achieve it, and then we may look back. Only if I would have done that, only if I could have had this and that. We can lament like that. So what happens to such a person? If, out of sentiment or for some other reason, he takes to the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, and in due course of time does not succeed in coming to the ultimate goal of life, or falls down due to lack of experience, there is no loss. But for a person who does not take to devotional service, yet executes his material duties very nicely, there is no gain. Text 38. Yasmin idam sarasad atmataya vibhati. Yasmin, in which idam, this, sarasad, the Supreme Lord in his different energies, atmataya, being the root cause and the root of all causes and effects. So this Supreme Lord, from which everything comes, everything that we see as a cause in the material world, and everything we see as an effect of the so many different causes in the material world. What's an example of a cause in the material world? Something very tangible.
Milk.
Huh? Milk?
Because of yoga.
Cause of yoga, yes. My immediate thought was a tree, a cause of this table.
Clouds.
Yeah, the clouds, the cause of rain. So the table is an effect, but it's also the cause of the what is this called again? A cup. It's resting upon, it's the cause of it being able to not be put on the ground. So the table is both a cause and an effect. But if we trace back all the different causes and effects in existence, one ultimately finds out, if one is very fortunate, that Sarva Karana Karanam Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhata. He is the prime mover. Aham eva sam eva gre nanyat yat sarasat param. He is the cause of everything. So he is the root cause and root effects. He manifests illusion, vibhati maya, vivek vaduti, sraji. Okay, now we'll read the translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests himself as one with the cause and effects within this body. He is the root cause of all causes and effects. But one who has transcended the illusory energy, which is also coming from Krishna, because he is the cause of all causes, by deliberate consideration he's transcended it, which clears the conception of a snake for a rope. He does not see things as they are not. He sees things as they are. He can understand that the Paramatma is eternally transcendental to the material creation. He is free from the material world, although he causes the material world. And all the effects of the material world are resting on him. So one who is free from Maya can understand this, that the Lord is transcendental. Thus the Lord is transcendental to all material contamination. It has nothing to do with the modes of material nature. And to that Lord, Paramatma, or the cause of all causes, Govinda, who is transcendental, who is not in the slightest tinged by the modes of material nature, that he is the controller of everything and not under the control of anything, to him only one must surrender. Here is the conclusion, getting to the conclusion. We'll read the last paragraph of Prabhupada's purport. What word is used for surrender here?
Prapadyaya.
The word prapadyaya is also significant in this verse, for it refers to the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, 1866, Sarvadamam Pratyaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja. In another place, the Lord says, Bahunam Janamanante Gyanamamam Prapadyante. This Prapadye or Sharanam Braja, refers to the individual's surrender to the Supersoul. The individual soul, when surrendered, can understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although situated within the heart of the individual soul, is superior to the individual soul. It is not that one can surrender to become the Supreme. That is not surrender. That there is motivation attached to that. Surrender means I give myself up unto you. Please allow me to serve you. I have been covered by this false sense of independence, which is named ahankar, false ego, anadi, forever practically. And it has caused me what? Unlimited material desires, unlimited material attempts to become happy, and the result of all that was my consciousness has shrunk. And now I try to serve you, but all I see is matter. I cannot see you. Although anta ba'ir avashtita, you're everywhere. But my consciousness is so shrunk due to all my material desires and plans based on false ego, based on wishing everyone to surrender to me instead of wishing me to surrender unto you, O Krishna. So, clearly, as Prabhupada explains, the word prapadye, right at the end, refers to the process of devotional service. Surrender means devotional service. This is the essence of bhakti. This is where karma yoga turns into bhakti, with surrender. I give myself to you. Karma yoga, I am still in the center. Bhakti prapadye has to take place. Sharanam braja, you are in the center. I will attempt to please you. This is spiritual life. It refers clearly to devotional service. The word, simply by non-devotional speculation on the rope and the snake, one cannot approach the absolute truth. Therefore, devotional service is stressed as more important than deliberation or mental speculation to understand the absolute truth. And look who is speaking this. This is the four Kumaras, the greatest of the jnanis. They are the personification of the verses Bahunam Janamanante Gyanamamapadyante Vasudeva Savamiti Samahatmasudolava. They're the jnanis who, by smelling the fragrance of the tulsi that is on the Lord's lotus feet through the breeze, they experienced the most. They were already beyond all material. Nothing in the material world could entice them. They were beyond that, disturb them, entice them, attract them. But when they smelled the fragrance of those tulsis, they became agitated in mind. What is this? It's beyond the material world. This is Krishna's transcendental form. And there was Krishna standing before them with one arm upon Garuda, having walked there with his own lotus feet to protect his devotees, Jai and Vijay, looking so beautiful. They became completely entrapped by the Lord's beauty, his form. So they are speaking. The guru of all the impersonalists are telling everyone to surrender. Now, 38 and 39 are the actual conclusion. I missed a comment. To text 37, Srila Swami says, he comments, says, please try to understand the truth. Because he says here, Prabhupada's translation is, please try to understand Supreme Personality of Godhead who was in everyone's heart. So Srila Swami says, please try to understand the truth that I shall now give you. He then carefully gives that instruction, the truth that he wants him clearly to understand, in two verses, 39 and 40. So we're coming to those two verses which summarize the teachings of Sanat Kumar to Prithu Maharaj, right here. The first one, Yad Pada Pankaja Palasa Vilasa Bhaktya. Who knows this verse? You know it? Good. Everyone. Karma Shayan Grititam Tadvan Narikta Matayo Yatayo Pirudha Shoto Ganastamaranam Bhajavasudevam. And the next one. Kritsho Mahaniha Bhavarnavanam Aplavesham Sadva Ganakramasukena Tatirshanti Tatvam Hare Bhagavato Bhajaniya Mangram. So 39. We'll read both the verses and then purports. The devotees who are always engaged in the service of the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord can very easily overcome the hard-knotted desire for fruitive activities. Because this is very difficult, the non-devotees, the jnanis and yogis, although trying to stop the waves of sense gratification, cannot do so. Therefore, you are advised to engage in the devotional service of Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. Shotoganastam maranam bhajavasudevam. The ocean of nescience is very difficult to cross because it is infested with many dangerous sharks. Although those who are non-devotees undergo severe austerities and penances to cross that ocean, we recommend that you simply take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Tatvam Harir Bhagavato Bhajaniya Angrim. You simply take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are like boats for crossing the ocean. Although the ocean is difficult to cross, by taking shelter of his lotus feet, you will overcome all dangers. Prabhupada's purport, we'll read the entire purport to 39 and then part of the purport to 40. There are three kinds of transcendentalists trying to overcome the influence of the modes of material nature. So it is very important not that we think of this just intellectually, that there are three kinds of transcendentalists and the jnanis and yogis don't succeed, but the bhaktis succeed. But we should try to understand what bhakti actually is and why the bhaktis succeed. And we should try to become bhaktis. Or if we cannot become bhaktis, we should become bhaktai bhakta jana priya. Because in the ninth canto, the Lord says that what to speak of my devotees being dear to me, even the devotees of my devotees are dear to me. Aham hari paradino bhakta. I'm controlled by my devotees. All of them, the jnanis, yogis, and bhaktis, attempt to overcome the influence of the senses, which is compared to the incessant waves of a river. The waves of a river flow incessantly. What does incessantly mean? Constantly, without stopping. And it is very difficult to stop them. Similarly, the waves of desire for material enjoyment are so strong that they cannot be stopped by any process other than bhakti yoga. Now, how is it possible that bhaktas can stop these incessant desires? The jnanis who are so renounced, the yogis who are so expert at controlling their body and mind, they cannot control the incessant flow of material desires. But the bhaktas who don't perform austerities like the jnanis and yogis do, they do it. How is it possible? Listen to the answer to this question. The bhaktas, by their transcendental devotional service unto the lotus feet of the Lord, become so overwhelmed with transcendental bliss that automatically their desires for material enjoyment stop. This is bhakta. The jnanis and yogis who are not attached to the lotus feet of the Lord simply struggle against the waves of desire. They are described in this verse as rikta mattaya, which means devoid of devotional service. In other words, the jnanis and yogis, although trying to be free from the desires of material activities, actually become more and more entangled in false philosophical speculation or strenuous attempts to stop the activities of the senses. As stated previously in Bhagavatam 1.27, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Jnanayatyasuvairagyam Janam Chayarahaitukam. Here also the same point is stressed. Bhaja Vasudevam indicates that one who is engaged in the loving service of Krishna, the son of Vasudev, can very easily stop the waves of desires. Engage in the loving service. The loving service. In other words, bhakti. It is not mechanical. It is filled with affection. Such a person can stop his material desires by virtue of his being overwhelmed with transcendental bliss. Otherwise, the struggle will go on. As long as one continues to try to artificially stop the waves of desires, he will certainly be defeated. That is indicated in this verse. Desires for fruitive activities are strongly rooted, but the trees of desires can be uprooted completely by devotional service, because devotional service employs superior desires. So this was practically the first thing that Sanatana Kumara explained, and Prabhupada explained the purport. By hearing about Krishna, param dvisvana vartate. To try to stop desires is impossible. Now, we may think that how is it possible for such a fallen soul, a neophyte like me, to ever experience the cessation of material desires by bathing in this ocean of bliss that's being described. I'm such a beginner. Now, Prabhupada will speak very practically here. Desires for fruitive activities are strongly rooted, but the trees of desire can be uprooted completely by devotional service, because devotional service employs superior desires. One can give up inferior desires when engaged in superior desires. To try to stop desires is impossible. One has to desire the supreme in order not to be entangled in inferior desires. Jnanis maintain a desire to become one with the supreme, but such desire is also considered to be kam, lust. Similarly, the yogis desire mystic power, and that is also kam. And the bhaktas, not being desirous of any sort of material enjoyment, become purified. There is no artificial attempt to stop desire. Desire becomes a source of spiritual enjoyment under the protection of the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord. It is stated herein by the Kumaras that the lotus feet of Lord Krishna are the ultimate reservoir of all pleasure. One should therefore take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord instead of trying unsuccessfully to stop desires for material enjoyment. As long as one is unable to stop the desire for material enjoyment, there is no possibility of becoming liberated from the entanglement of material existence. It may be argued that the waves of a river are incessantly flowing and they cannot be stopped, but the waves of the river flow towards the sea. When the tide comes over the river, it overwhelms the flowing of the river, and the river itself becomes overflooded. And the waves from the sea become more prominent than the waves from the river. Has anyone ever seen this? Where? In Dwarka, that's where I was thinking too. The river, what do they call it? The Gumti. There, pronounced it as written, the Gomati. So the river has its flowing, like the desires flow, but sometimes when the tide becomes high, when the waves of desire coming from the ocean itself, they're so powerful, it overfloods the river. So without the waves of our Krishna conscious desire becoming strong, without very strong Krishna conscious desires, then the material waves of the river-like desires will give us trouble. Similarly, a devotee with intelligence, please listen because Prabhupada is being really practical here. A devotee with intelligence plans so many things for the service of the Lord and Krishna consciousness that stagnant material desires become overflooded by the desire to serve the Lord. So if one wants to overcome the material desires that we heard of yesterday that can give so many of us trouble, this has to be done. This is the medicine. We need to be planning and planning and planning enthusiastically how to please Krishna. That desire to please Krishna on whatever level, whether it's on the pure Vrindavan level or on the pure preaching level, or on the pure deity worship level, or on the pure whatever our methodology is, whatever our enthusiasm is, huh? Collecting. If you collect for Krishna, you can do it. But you have to also purely give it all to Krishna. That I will never say. But one needs that genuine, very overflooding enthusiasm to please Krishna, Krishna's devotees. Without that ocean welling up, the river of our material desires will give us trouble. So this is the system. And Prabhupada is very intelligently, very kindly, following the example of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, has given us a preaching movement that even though we may not be on the highest platform of prema bhakti, but still, there are so many things to desire for the pleasure of Krishna. From the books to being distributed to every person in this world becoming a devotee. There are so many things to desire. Because that was the kind of consciousness that Prabhupada actually had. It was so overwhelmingly flooded with desires for Krishna's pleasure. The depths of those desires I cannot even begin to estimate, but I could say there was a flood. He wanted everyone in the world to become Krishna conscious. Now it's on tape, but on the MP3s. But I remember when I was in Hong Kong, we had somehow or another. It was very rare to get tapes of Prabhupada speaking, but I had a few. And there was one where Prabhupada was speaking to some devotees in 1967 in San Francisco. And Jamuna Mataji, she told Prabhupada of a dream that she had. She said, in this dream, there was a kirtan there were so many people participating in the kirtan that when Prabhupada said, Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribhajakacharya, talking to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, this was Jamuna Mataji's dream. She said, then the whole world bowed down. And then you said, she told Prabhupada, now my Guru Maharaj is satisfied. And Prabhupada replied, thank you for dreaming like this. That was the level that Prabhupada was thinking on. How to get the whole world to bow down to Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Prabhu, to the Panchatattva, to Sri Vrindavan Dham, to Radha Shyama Sundar. So we perhaps can't naturally, practically desire on such a level. Our compassion is limited by the size of our heart and our purity. We may not be able to desire on such a level, but we can pick some little corner of that. We can pick some little service and desire on a big level on that. And if we can do that and make those desires flood our heart, then we can very fortunately stop this relentless, continuous river of material desires from distracting us, turning us over. So this methodology, Prabhupada concludes this purport with by saying, as confirmed by Jamunacharya, since he has been engaged in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, there is always a current of newer and newer desires flowing to serve the Lord, so much so that the stagnant desire of sex life becomes very insignificant. Jamunacharya even says that he spits on such desires. Bhagavad Gita 2:59 also confirms param drisvanavartite, same principle. The conclusion is that by developing a loving desire for the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, we subdue all material desires for sense gratification. And then the final verse in these, the same point, you will overcome all dangers, all the shocks of these material desires by simply taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are like boats for crossing the ocean. We'll read from about a third of the way down Prabhupada's purport. Although there are many methods or boats by which one can cross the ocean, the Kumaras recommend that the king take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, just as one would take shelter of a good boat. Non-devotees who do not take shelter of the Lord's lotus feet try to cross the ocean of nescience by other methods, karma, jnana, and yoga. But they have a great deal of trouble. Indeed, sometimes they become so busy simply enjoying their troubles that they never cross the ocean. There is no guarantee that the non-devotees will cross the ocean. But even though they manage to cross, they have to undergo severe austerities and penances. On the other hand, anyone who takes to the process of devotional service and has faith that the lotus feet of the Lord are safe boats to cross that ocean is certain to cross very easily and comfortably. Maharaj Prithu is therefore advised to take the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord to easily cross over all dangers. Dangerous elements in the universe are compared to sharks in the ocean. Even though one may be a very expert swimmer, he cannot possibly survive if he is attacked by sharks. One often sees that many so-called swamis and yogis sometimes advertise themselves as competent to cross the ocean of nescience and to help others cross. But in actuality, they are found to be simply victims of their own senses. Instead of helping their followers to cross the ocean of nescience, this is the causal ocean, such swamis and yogis fall prey to Maya, represented by the fair sex women, and are thus devoured by the sharks in that ocean. I would like to read something else, another verse spoken by Lord Brahma about using or taking advantage of the lotus feet of the Lord as the boat to cross the ocean. It is a verse that one time Prabhupada was asked by, I think, Satsrup Raj, what does surrender mean? And Prabhupada recited this verse. He said, Samasritam ye parapalava plavam mahatpadam punyayasho murari bhavam buddhir vachabadam parampadam padam padam yad vipadam natesham. And then Prabhupada read the translated and said, now do you understand what surrender means? And here is the translation. 58, chapter 14, 10th canto, Brahma's Prayers. 58. I believe it's 58. Yes, 58. For those who have accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, same principle that the four Kumaras are speaking of, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon. The ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoofprint. It shrinks in size. Such persons, their goal is Parampadam, Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. Let me read the first, the commentary of Srila Swami on this text. Because Sri Krishna alone is the supreme goal, liberation is attained without endeavor by those who take exclusive shelter of Him. This purport of the entire section is summarized in the verse beginning with Samasrita, all of Brahma's prayers. Punyayasho means he whose glories are pious, and that person is Murari. His bud-like lotus feet are a boat, and those who have taken shelter of them, which are the shelter of the great souls, take shelter of them, which are also the shelter of the great souls. Or those feet are also great, and thus for such persons the ocean of material existence becomes merely the hoofprint, vatsapadam, of a calf. Moreover, they get the supreme padam, the place known as Sri Vaikuntha, and they never again experience the sense gratification that is the padam of dangers, the abode of dangers, that such no longer exists for them. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in this way, it is proved that Sri Krishna is the final object of pure spiritual love. Only by taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet does one get liberated and finally realize Him. The outstanding position of Krishna's devotees is now made clear. Why? Because they have taken full shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. They have no other shelter other than Him. Devotees take shelter, ashrita, only of the boat, plavam, of the lotus feet, parapalava, of Krishna, Murari, whose fame, yasha, is charming, beautiful, and pleasing to the heart. Someone may ask, what is that boat like? The boat of Krishna's lotus feet gives shelter to the great devotees, mahatpadam, who have taken complete shelter. Some, for those devotees, for these devotees, the ocean of the material world, Bhavam Buddhi, becomes like the water in a calf's hoofprint that can be crossed without any great effort. Their goal is the supreme transcendental abode, Parampadam, of Vaikuntha or Sri Vrindavan. Great devotees never fall into difficulty, Vipadam, because their minds are not attached to anything except the lotus feet of Krishna. So that's the end of the words of the four Kumaras explaining in a using many points from about detachment from the bodily concept of life, like the jnanis, how the jnanis think, explain the process of devotional service and its essence. The hearing and chanting and the taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Now we had planned to read some more up to text 45, but I think we shall save that tomorrow. And Krishna willing, I think we could finish the chapter tomorrow. Yes, that's the plan. So we may try to go from 41 all the way up to 63. We'll try. We'll see how it goes. Any questions? Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yes?
How is that the meaning of God is that devotee with intelligence blinds so many things? Is he saying that the devotee who has intelligence or the devotee with intelligence blinds? Any devotee that can make blinds?
Well, Krishna will... An intelligent devotee will plan as many ways as he possibly can to serve Krishna. There are different kinds of intelligence. Some devotee may have an intelligence for addressing the deities. That's given by Krishna. Some devotee may have an intelligence for preaching to non-devotees. That's given by Krishna. Some devotee may have intelligence to manage the preaching, and that's given by Krishna. Some devotee may have intelligence for distributing books, for singing kirtans in a wonderful way. So your question was, is it an intelligent devotee plans, or
is it exclusively meant for devotees who are on a higher platform? The devotee who is neophyte, Krishna was...
No, the planning makes one intelligent. Anyone who plans seriously only to please Krishna, Janakama Anavrita, he's intelligent. That's the point. That it's intelligent because the whole section has been saying, give up the desires for karma and jnana and try to please Krishna. Because everything is else is temporary other than the results gained by pleasing Krishna. So an intelligent person will take these instructions from the most intelligent and only try to please Krishna and plan and plan and plan to please Krishna. But everyone should plan how to... Otherwise, how will his service... attitude. We have to become filled with desires and plans how to please Krishna. Even if we do something simple, making a garland, we should plan how to make it so beautiful. That takes a particular type of intelligence that I don't have. How to make the colors so beautiful so that Krishna is pleased. Mataji, do you have a dream about making garlands for Krishna? That's very good. Wonderful. Whatever we have to use it. But the point being that the ocean of our desires to serve Krishna has to become very powerful to bring out the tide and overflood the river of material desires. That is the point. And that is the solution to the problem that we brought up yesterday. What to do if you have material desires? But there's another, but I'm not sure that that mood conflicts with this mood, that you should, your desires to serve Krishna must be overflooding. It has, that's our responsibility if we wish to not only survive but flourish in our Krishna consciousness. So, never mind the rest. Then do it. Then do it. I find that's the hard part, to do it. Because that comes by an inspiration of Krishna. It's a meditation. How can I please Krishna? How can I please Guru? How can I please Prabhupada?
We were in the train amongst our three, and we came to that point, and this is amazing.
Yeah. And then the bliss covers one's material. It makes them appear tuchavat, insignificant, as if insignificant.
I was hearing one surrender. Here it says it's Prabhupada. Prabhupada is the individual surrender to the super soul. And I was hearing the symptoms just recently of surrender, primarily one of them out of, say, six of Rupa Goswami's. Rupa Goswami defines as accepting the Lord as one's only guide.
Protector.
And protect.
Guard.
Is this how you see this individual surrender to the super soul, or perhaps you have another view to present?
What Prabhupada explained was from a different point of view, that I have unlimited desires to please Krishna. Let me try to see how to do that, how many of those I can fulfill. And then one could say, well, who's going to take care of me? And that's where that point comes in. If I give myself fully to Krishna and just plan continuously, be overflooded with desires to please Him, who will take care of me? Who will protect me? So the answer to that is that point. Krishna will protect me. So therefore, before we can do that, we have to have faith in Krishna. Before we have faith in Krishna, we have to have knowledge who Krishna is, how powerful He is. Does He actually have the ability to protect fallen, insignificant me? Why would He do that? Even He has the ability, but why would He? We have to deeply answer these questions. Pachigul. You try your best. They may not be big plans, and lots of plans doesn't mean always huge. It could also be deep. One could plan to know the Bhagavatam so well that you could properly teach it. That's also a big plan that will fill up one's day for many, many years, many lifetimes.
You mentioned how we have a focus usually 5, 10, 15, 20 years, well, 30, 40, 50.
No, I didn't mean focus, I meant our conception. Of good and bad.
As far as planning comes in like that, and Krishna knows actually what's best for us, and things do change according to plan. Is it possible to plan beyond our, let's say, condition or ability to plan for a period of time? Is it really possible to plan beyond that? Or is it useless to try?
Well, what it seems to me, if I've understood your question, that you have a desire that may be very, very big and you may not get to it. Okay? But what you have to do is keep your feet on the ground and know what your first step is in a practical way. But if you don't have your vision in front of you, then there is no impetus to even take a first step. And the steps have to be practical. It's like when you're driving a car. If you're driving a car from here to Kanpur, say, if you don't fix your mind on Kanpur to some degree, you have to know what your goal is. You have to have it pretty clear. But if you're only thinking about Kanpur and don't watch where the tires are and where you're going, or a little bit ahead of where you are, you get into more trouble. But if you don't have it clearly conceived of in your mind where you're going, you won't have any frame of reference to know whether you're going supposed to go left or right.
The point I was trying to say, the frame of reference is really, until we're at that stage when we are surrendered, that frame of reference is somewhat unsurrendered, and therefore it may not match the Lord's plan for us.
We'll find out in time.
There's going to be many bumps on that road.
But there's always going to be bumps on the road. Even in the royal road, there are bumps. Don't expect, that's what Prabhupada said yesterday. He got a letter saying that, I'm trying to become a devotee, how come I got sick? We have to tolerate the bumps and keep our mind focused on the goal, and yet keep our vision pretty much where we are. And we shouldn't make our plan just ourselves. We should do that in conjunction with our spiritual master, who we trust. But we have to have, if we're not enthusiastic and filled with Krishna conscious desires, do you think we'll end up being desireless? No. So many material desires will enter our heart. So therefore, utsahan, Rupa Goswami says, first enthusiasm. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Uttam Maharaj ki jai. Fokumaraj ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.